With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to Episode 7 of The Story Studio with your hosts, Luke Condor and Daniel Wilcox. Oh yeah, here we go. Check it out now.
Welcome to the Story Studio, a podcast where an independent publishing company explores the world of self-publishing, independent art, and the future of storytelling. It's a show for filmmakers, writers, comic book makers, crowdfunders, entrepreneurs, creators, and anyone looking to tell stories in the modern world. My name is Luke Condor, and I'm joined by Daniel Wilcox and...
Matthew Stott.
Hey. Sorry, Dan. I jumped on your speaking bit there, Dan.
No, you were on a roll. It was fine. I felt like you needed that after... I think that's the first time you've broken during that first part. You've broken a perfect record.
Yeah. Sorry, but I'm going to overdub it. It's fine.
That's fine. Yeah. I'll have to give it a go one time and see how well I do. I don't think I'll do very well.
So how's the writing going, guys? All going well?
After you, Matt.
Yeah, kind of. I think so. I've been very undisciplined at the moment, though. I'm not getting enough done, basically. But yeah.
What are you?
It's going all right.
Cool. What are you working on at the minute?
I've got this mini-series called Apocalypse Hill.
Mm.
And I've got part two just about to come out, and I'm trying to finish the thing off so I can go on to something new.
I'm tired
of working on the same thing for so long now. So, yeah, I'm ready to move on, hopefully, eventually.
Yeah. Awesome. We'll jump back into that, yeah, in a little bit. But sorry, I'm taking you over, Luke.
No, it's cool, man. Yeah. What about you, Dan? What are you working on?
So I am coming up to the final part of... our book Lazarus. So I'm kind of in the same place that Matt is, because I'm getting to the point where I'm just like, I'm so ready just to have a fresh story starting, because my favorite part of any book is the first bit and getting stuck in. And my word counts at the beginning are sort of nothing to what they are now. But yeah, it's going well. It's I'm on 58K now, I think. So it's getting there. How about you, Luke?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm not on 58K. I've managed to just...
Line.
Yeah, I think I'm on 51 or something now. But yeah, it's cool. I've just moved into a new house. It's nice to not have to write on a bedroom floor or have to go to a cafe or something.
You're suffering for your art.
Yeah, I've got a little spot in the kitchen. I like to be right next to the coffee machine, so I could just have a constant flow of coffee.
Oh, that's dangerous.
I need it, man. I need it in the morning, especially.
Yeah.
I've noticed you both are now cracking on with Steam It, which is, I think it's a pretty interesting little thing. I know Dan's had some crazy success with it the past couple of days. How's it?
I don't know. How.
Yeah, it's random. How have you found it, Matt?
Well, I've only been on it like maybe 2 days, and I haven't really explored it properly yet. I don't really quite understand even what it is at the moment.
Yeah.
Other than there seems to be lots of random bits of writing. I don't know how do you work it? How do you get anyone to look at this stuff? Or is it just by chance that someone stumbles across something? And yes, I don't know. I've made about 3 cents, I think, at the moment of it.
Nice.
Which I don't know if that's... I don't think that's great.
It's not bad for a start, I think. Luke's definitely got much more of an insight than I have.
Honestly, I don't feel like it's about quality on Steam It. Not at all. Like it's literally just, I think quality helps. I feel like it's a game of cards, right? And you just constantly play. The more you play, the better chance you get. And the better you get, the better you understand the games, the better you understand how to write, like you two guys obviously do, the more chance you have of striking it and just getting lucky with one of those whale accounts. And now, if you get a whale to upvote your post, then you'll have, like Dan had, like $300 or something the other day.
$390 it settled on. And that was a post that I literally threw together at lunchtime and went, oh, let's see if that works. And then the next minute I checked and it had nearly $400 on it. So I can't explain it. I tried to do it the following day and it didn't happen. So
Yeah,
it does. I was looking at some of what you two have put up, and it does seem kind of almost random, where you'll see one post and you'll have made hundreds, and then you put one up the next day and it made nothing at all.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a random,
I thought I was doing all right. I had a bit of a streak of, like, it was like between $30 and $40, like 4 or 5 days in a row, and I thought, oh, I cracked it. Finally got that, like, consistent. But the past three posts have had nothing. So
See, a time of day, I think, has a fair bit to do with it, but it's also opportunity and who's online. And I should probably, while I've got you, Matt, I should probably thank you for my review of your book has earned me $20. So if you do want to take any percentage of that, because that is your art, then by all means.
I did upvote that. I saw that.
thank you very much. I think it was $20 on that one.
Yeah, I think it was, So today we're going to be talking about, like, writing horror stories and scary stories and I guess strange stories. But before all that, we need to crack on with the big whoops.
Oh, what a big whoop.
So, who's got a big whoop?
Shall I take the first one?
Yeah, go for it, man.
Okay, my big whoop is, I was kind of torn between two, but I'll settle with one and use the other one next week. Are you guys familiar with George Watsky?
No.
No. So, George Watsky was a poet who came out of San Francisco, some university in San Francisco, and he was a kind of spoken word poet that went around and traveled colleges and schools and universities in America, and ended up coming onto YouTube about, must be 5-6 years ago, and started rapping. And he was one of the nerdiest white guys you've ever seen. And he's kind of risen to a weird, like, hip hop success, and has come out with some fantastic tunes, sort of travels America and England, and I've seen him live a couple of times, and his new album came out this week, last week. I downloaded it this week, and it's called Times Infinity, or X Infinity, however you want to do it. But it's just a CD full of just fantastic word plays, just some brilliant lyrics, some great music, and definitely sort of some of the best, more commercial stuff, but some of the best stuff that I've heard him do. And yeah, he's just doing really, really well with it. So,
is it along the lines of, like, Scroobius Pip, like a spoken word guy doing rap?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah. It's a bit more hip hop than Pip, but yeah, it's honestly really worth giving a listen.
Cool. Yeah, man. I don't really listen to rap music much, but my friend at work, my colleague, has been putting on the Eminem album. Marshall Mathers 2.
Yes.
It's really good. Like, I'm not like a rap person, but it's just honestly, like, really well, just really great spoken word.
It's, yeah, Eminem's definitely, because I'm a massive fan of just the wordplay that he uses, but he's definitely kind of, with that album, taken a whole new style, whereas before it would be sort of like an AA rhyme structure, sort of one line rhyme. It's a lot more flowy, it's a lot more literary, and I don't know, it's different, but it just works.
Yeah, it's good.
Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so my big whip this week is a TV show called The Night Of. Have you heard about it? Do you know much about it?
No.
Okay.
Heard of it? Some sort of murder thing?
Yeah. So it's like a gritty, it's based on a BBC show. So HBO have taken some BBC show called Criminal Justice. I've never heard of it. No idea what it is. But it's like a really complex, gritty story about it's a conservative Muslim who goes on a night out with this girl, gets drunk, takes some drugs, has a bit of the old sex, and then passes out, and then he wakes up and the girl's been murdered. So obviously he panics and runs away. This is all in, like, the first episode.
That's the last thing you want from a bit of sex.
Yeah. So he runs away, And then he gets arrested. He's got the murder weapon on him for some reason. And they instantly think it's him. They fast track him. Don't do the due diligence, whatever it's called, to process the guy. It's all about how he gets chucked into this prison system. And there's like one lawyer who, John Turturro, who's one of my favorite actors. He's like incredible. He's like this lawyer who's got eczema, weirdly enough. but he's like, while this conservative Muslim is basically becoming a criminal because he's in that environment and he has to sort of change, become really violent to survive amongst those people. John Turturro is basically becoming like the detective role, and he's finding out who actually did the crime. And it's really, really good. It's really tense. Some of the prison scenes are pretty tense. Some of like the first episode is pretty immense when he's trying not to get caught, and you know it's not him, or you suppose it's not him. But yeah, it's really good. I'd definitely recommend it.
Sounds really psychological.
It is, yeah, definitely.
Does it make like you
thing, or is it a one-off mini series, or is
it's
that...
a 8-episode series? I suppose they could do a second season, but I kind of feel like you'd be missing the point of the series. It's quite well self-contained within itself.
Not with the same suspect waking up again.
That's what I thought. it's like the Hangover. Like the Hangover, he goes out and he wakes up next to a dead person every time.
I need to stop having bits of sex.
What about you, Matt?
Okay, well, there's two things I've enjoyed recently. One, Stranger Things. Everyone's probably seen that. I won't go into that.
Fantastic show.
So the other one's a book. Have you heard of Paul? I don't know how you say it. Paul Tremblay or Trembly? It's something like that.
The name rings a bell.
He did a book called A Head Full of Ghosts, I think it was called. And he's just had a new one called Disappearance at Devil's Rock, which is kind of a spooky, someone goes missing and is there something a little bit satanic somehow in the mix? And it's a really good, I don't usually get that unnerved by books particularly, but this one kind of put me a little bit on the edge. And I even woke up in the middle of the night at one point and it played on my mind a little bit, which is a bit odd. And I think it's a really, if you want quite a cool, it's not all blood and guts and gore or anything, it's just a weird atmosphere that kind of gets under your skin a bit. So I'd recommend that.
Yeah. Is it similar to, have you read Johnny Truant's House of Leaves?
No.
No. Well, that
I thought you meant Johnny B. Truant there for a second.
No. But interestingly, that is where he gets his pen name from.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of one of those books where it's not so much that a lot of gory stuff or a lot of horrible stuff happens. It's just that kind of twisted thing that really gets under your skin. But I'll have to get a read. That sounds interesting.
I'll have to check out that book. I've heard of that book, and I for some reason thought it was some literary kind of.
I was under the impression it was as well. Yeah. Is it not?
It's kind of experimental. So if I can remember rightly, because it was a few years ago that I read it, it's so basically the house that this family move into and this guy move into is a quarter of an inch bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. And the story, the book itself is told through...
It's not very much bigger.
I know. The story is told through like journal recollections, through the guy's narrative, through sort of loads of different sources. The actual book itself looks like a collection of documents. And it tells a story of a doorway in a basement that leads to a room. And the next time he goes down there, there's rooms off of that, and then this massive sort of labyrinth that extends under his house. And he kind of eventually, it's that big that he gets lost in it. And yeah, it's one of those that really just gets under your skin. And it, I remember reading it just going, oh, like
that does sound quite cool. I'll have to check that out. Yeah.
So, Matt, I think I first heard about you because I think we published our first novels around the same time. And we were hanging around on the keyboards in like a newbie group thing. Does that sound about right?
That is correct, yeah.
Cool. When did you first start writing, first of all? Like, when did you first start writing prose?
Prose? I mean, I wrote it a little bit when I was like a kid, when I was a teenager, maybe a little bit. But I went very quickly into scripts, kind of forgot about books. It wasn't really until I started writing A Monstrous Place, which is my first one I put out, I kind of went back to prose. So that was only, maybe I started writing it 2 years ago, 18 months ago. No, probably 2 years ago. So it hasn't really been that long. So I'm probably not that good at this point.
Because I can counter-argue that. I've read Apocalypse Hill.
Oh, well, thank you. But yeah, I kind of been concentrating on scripts for like so long, and it's just, it's still quite a new, fresh thing to me trying to do prose. So yeah, hopefully I'll get better, but we'll see.
I think that's one of the things about being an indie author, isn't it? You're constantly working on your craft anyway. So
yeah, I've always heard the thing, write your first book and kind of put it in a drawer and don't let anyone see it. But I published mine. So
yeah, I published mine as well.
Yeah, yeah, this is what I've done with A Clockwork Rose. I'm kind of on that fence of, do I just pop it in a drawer or do I actually publish it? But we'll see.
Publish it.
I mean, what's the worst that can happen? It's okay.
I could die.
That is true.
I quite like that in this, like, that in this indie author world, we can publish those books and we can see a progression of our skills and maybe get some fans along the way. I mean, I don't think
it's shameful to like have an early work out there that's not fully realized in some way. I think it's better to see that kind of progression. The same with if you're in a band, you put out your first few demos or albums or whatever, and you see yourself develop rather than, wow, he was amazing from the off.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point, because I think, you know, coming from a history of traditional publishing being the major player when it comes to books, you don't kind of have that feel, do you? I mean, musicians want to get published with major labels, or did before, you know, building their own audience was a possibility. But if musicians can do it, why can't authors?
Yeah, also, you don't get that feedback on the first book if you just don't do anything with it. Whereas if you go through the process of getting it edited, packaging it up and putting it out there and getting those reviews, it's very difficult to know where you actually stand in the real world, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, mine, I suppose my very first one was kind of quite short as well. I didn't like dive in on a 120,000 word epic. So the worst that could happen is that it would be a bit crap, but it probably wouldn't be too boring for people because it would be over so quick. And I would learn plenty of things for the next thing. So, yeah, I think it's worth putting anything out, unless it's genuinely terrible and you know it is. It's worth putting it out.
It's funny. On Steam, I'm literally just publishing my old short stories. And now I read those back, I'm like, I probably wouldn't publish this like on Kindle now. But I'm kind of glad to see that I can recognize that it's not as good as it needs to be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How long have you been writing scripts for, Matt?
I guess I started writing scripts when I was about 13 or something like that. So it's it's a long time now. But I went through a different phases of what I wanted to write. So it started off with I would be obsessed with like the X-Files or whatever. And I was like, oh, I'll write the X-Files. And then it got into films. And I thought I could be a film writer and director. And then that quickly was like, no, I will never do that. That's not going to happen. And then it went into comedy scripts. So it's kind of gone all the way across the gamut of different types of things and for different mediums. And nowadays, apart from the books, I try to write comedy scripts. That's where I'm at the moment. Sitcom scripts, I guess.
Where does your heart lie? Is it more in the scripts or is it more in the prose?
It's at the moment, if I'm honest, it's probably the books. If only because it's entirely me. It's not scripts are like, especially for a film or for TV, they're more like a blueprint for something, and it about a million other people get involved and they make something out of it, which can be good. Whereas books, it's just like, it's just for better or worse, I did all of it and there you go. That's what it is. And if it's all on me and it's all my voice, I guess. Because even with my scripts, in my comedy scripts, I write those with another person as well. So even then, so it's even less me, I guess.
Isabel, isn't it? I forget her second name.
Yeah, Isabel Fay. She's a performer as well as a writer, and we try to write funny spits together.
I spent a lot, before I started writing prose properly, I was writing films as well. And the reason I now hate writing screenplays to a certain degree is because nothing really ever happens. Like, or the majority of the time, nothing will ever come of it. And you'll end up with like a big folder of scripts that it's really difficult to get people to read because scripts aren't fun to read.
No.
Whereas a book is like something you can put out there and get people reading.
Yeah, I mean, that was another reason for wanting to deciding I'm going to write books and I'm going to do them on my own, is because you just either don't get read or you get rejected at some point along the line, and then the scripts just, they're kind of, I mean, they're there, but no one's seeing them. They don't get made. They're just on my laptop or printed out or something. And it's like, I mean, that was another reason for going indie with the books. So it's like, I'll just bypass that altogether. I'll just finish it and stick it out. And for better or worse, it's out there and someone will see it and someone will read it. It won't just be kind of gathering digital dust on my laptop.
Yeah, that was one of the things I wanted to ask, was how is life as an indie for Matt Stott? How have you found, you know, the indie process? And I know that you market your books quite heavily and you do well, and it's always over on sort of my feed. So how are you finding being an indie?
Well, I'm enjoying it. It's cool. I kind of like the slightly punk rock aspect of it, I guess, of just doing it.
That's what I love about it as well.
Yeah. I'm a very unorganized person, is my issue with the whole indie thing, because you have to be a bit of a businessman. You've got to put your businessman hat on, and I'm kind of terrible at all that. So I kind of flail about a little bit with that aspect of it. I try to put little processes in kind of place, and then I immediately abandon them after a week or so. And it's like, oh yeah, I was supposed to try and get some sort of promotion together, and I have not done any of that. I'll tweet about it instead to the same people who've seen it a million times. So that is the learning thing, really, trying to get better at that. But I'm enjoying it. I haven't had a huge hit or made lots of money, but I'm not really thinking of it in those terms, certainly not the next few years anyway, I don't think. Purely just getting better and trying to build a bit of a tribe behind me, I guess.
Yeah. That's definitely one of the more important parts, isn't it? Going in with that attitude of it is going to be a slow process. It's not going to be that, you know, if you traditionally publish, it's not always going to happen, but you're more likely to sort of strike gold. Whereas being an indie, it's increments.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if you're going into it it's a terrible thing to go into if you just want to make money, because it's kind of unlikely. And if you do, it might take you a long, long time. So it's not a money-making exercise by any means, unless you're willing to put in the long, long kind of, like Sterling and Stone always going on about, Johnny and all those guys, about always thinking long-term rather than going for the quick buck kind of thing, because that kind of thing can be pretty ephemeral, I think. Mm. You just want to build your fan base as much as you can. Yeah. And that's really something that I think you can do better in indie than you possibly can if you're traditionally published, just because you don't think about it, probably, because you're 100%. Not trying to push your stuff.
Yeah, I can't imagine a traditional author would think about it at all. I mean, I'm sure there are people who do, but...
I mean, there's people like Neil Gaiman, obviously, who do have that big tribe behind them.
Yeah.
But I think you just kind of lay it on your publisher, don't you, probably, if you're traditional, I would imagine.
They have teams for it, don't they?
Yeah. The same if you have an agent. If you're a scriptwriter and you have an agent, you think, oh, they will get me work. And that's not how it works. You kind of still have to push yourself out there yourself. And then they just handle the business kind of thing. So that's a good thing about being indie, I think, having that more.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to BOLLandBranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Direct contact with these people who are trying to read your stuff and trying to build that kind of relationship. It makes it more enjoyable, I think.
Yeah,
definitely. I think some of my favorite... One of the reasons I like the other stories, Dan, is some of the nice emails we get from people who...
100%, yeah.
Kind of makes it worth the hassle sometimes.
They come out of nowhere and it's so uplifting as well.
Yeah.
Anytime I get an email, it's always a surprise at this point still. Mm. And it's always... really nice. Yeah, no one's been nasty yet anyway. It's always been a really nice thing, and it's like, oh wow, someone is paying attention to some degree. This is nice.
Yeah. It gives you a bit of a boost, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So your first book was A Monstrous Place, came out in October last year. Is that the first novel you wrote? Did you write short stories first, or did you go straight into that?
Nope, I went straight into doing... I mean, it's only, I think, 32,000 words, because it's kind of aimed at younger kids, basically. I kind of looked at some of the shorter works that Neil Gaiman did for kids, like the Graveyard Book and Coraline, and I just Googled how many words are in those, and that was how many words I went for. So it's not a massively long thing. But I'm kind of proud of it, I think.
Yeah. Where did the idea come from?
The first idea came from, this is a bit odd, but I watched a documentary, you know, David Walliams, the Little Britain guy, and he writes a bunch of kids' books these days. He's like, I guess he's supposed to be the new, like, Roald Dahl type figure. Yeah. And he has the crazy front covers and stuff. And I watched that and I was like, I could probably do that. I reckon I could have a go at that. And what would be a crazy idea? What if there's a monster who lived next door and no one believed this little boy? Which isn't what A Monstrous Place is, but that was the initial kind of little idea that I had. And I thought, I will write a Roald Dahl type, slightly funny book. And then within a chapter of that, that kind of fell away. And it became this other thing instead, which is not particularly funny, I don't think. Hopefully it's not that funny anyway. Not supposed to be.
Yeah. Well, it's a nice starting place, isn't it, to have that idea and that kind of model set out and then run away with an idea. Sins of Smoke that I brought out last October, that originally I was trying to write another story and then that just came out of nowhere and I ran with it. So sometimes ideas like that can strike you and it's good just to run away with it and let it happen.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the ideas for mine mutate. So, I mean, that you've read Apocalypse Hill, the first one, Dan.
I have.
And you will probably not recognize this, but the initial idea was, what if there was a zombie outbreak on the International Space Station, which I thought was a good idea. The Walking Dead meets Gravity. I thought, that's a pretty cool idea. I'll do a short story about that. There are no zombies. It's not a zombie book, and it's not in space, any of it. So that mutated quite a lot into what it finally became.
No, that's really, really interesting, because I can see now that an element of it remained, because the main character's daughter is in space.
Yeah.
Is it daughter? If I remember it right,
She doesn't appear in the first one. But yeah, that was basically the character that was going to be the hero of this zombies in space thing that didn't... I actually wrote it, a bit of it, before going, I don't really want to write a zombie book and abandoning it.
And yeah, I'm thinking that after our writing at the minute.
So
I mean, I like zombies, but I kind of started thinking I need to put something a bit more fantasy in it. If I'm trying to build a brand, going into doing a zombie book after doing something more fantastical or supernatural seemed wrong, like anyone cared or was paying attention. But that was my thought, so I abandoned zombies for that one.
Yeah, and you've achieved it. I mean, sorry, Luke. But no, for those people who haven't read Apocalypse Hill, I definitely go give it a check out because it's I want to say a horror book, but it's not entirely horror because, like you say, it's got that fantasy edge to it. And the first few chapters, especially when it's sort of introducing some of the creatures, I won't give too much away because obviously I don't want to spoil it for people, but it really was gripping and it definitely had a kind of Tolkien-esque edge to it, but with that horror line to it. And it was a beautiful story. It's definitely worth a read.
It's on my to-read list. And Dan, I think you explained it to me as a sort of really dark Alice in Wonderland-y sort of horrible tale.
Yeah,
does that sound about right?
Yeah, I said it's sort of Alice in Wonderland meets Lord of the Rings meets sort of like Stephen King's imagination.
That sound about right, Matt?
Is that what you were going for?
Not entirely, but I mean, I've never read any Tolkien, so I wouldn't know. Basically, I haven't even seen the Lord of the Rings films, so there's no dwarves or axes or dragons in it. So,
yeah, most of it for me came in the Knotted Man. For reasons I won't say, but yeah.
Okay, so Matt, so you've written Apocalypse Hill. I think you finished book two, right?
It's just about. It comes out next week. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. we'll link to that then in the show notes. What do you think was the biggest lesson you learned from writing A Monstrous Place and those first three books that you then implemented in writing this book? Like, what changed in your process?
What changed was the planning stages. More than anything, just the trying to get more and more in depth with the beats and fleshing all that kind of thing out. I mean, I've never kind of jump into a story and just do it and see where it'll take me, because that'll just mean I'll get stuck after a couple of chapters and I'll just abandon it. But I did vague what I called skeletons, where it was just like it wasn't even chapter by chapter. It'd just be one idea and then like a one line idea and then another line and then another line until I got to the end. And now I guess as well, because this was a bigger project than those other ones, I've been trying to kind of go chapter by chapter and like write sometimes a few hundred words on what I think might happen and trying to flesh it out as much as possible. And even doing things like playing with things like trying to do character outlines before I start writing, which don't work entirely for me at the moment still, because I abandon them pretty quick. I think it's hard to stick to that kind of thing until you actually start writing, because you don't know what they're going to do exactly. You could say this person's this one thing, but then they don't end up doing that thing. I guess that is the major thing. I mean, I know some people hate planning too much. I think it's kind of takes away the magic or whatever they say. I don't buy. Because they think you have to stick to those beats then, I think, is the thing. Whereas it's almost like a safety net, I think, of those things now, where if you do get stuck, you kind of can't get stuck, because you can then just glance and go, okay, I'll do that then. You can't ever get stuck properly. So that's what I like, because I hate getting stuck. I hate having to stop. I just want to get through the thing and do it.
Yeah, it's that when you lose the momentum and you just feel like this is the worst thing in the world. But
yeah,
exactly. How did it change much when you were writing it from those beats? Like, when you were writing the Apocalypse Hill, so you had your beats, did the book change as you were writing it?
Well, it did, because it went in even a different way after I talked about that zombies in space thing. I beat out a whole book, which was an 80,000 word book, which I wrote, and then abandoned that after writing it. The beats process was supposed to, it will help me in the future, but it kind of, I'm saying I learned something. I didn't learn anything. I just got a new way to make it really difficult for myself. I beat out a whole book and I wrote it, and then I threw that away, and it's twisted around so many times that the beats in the end became almost meaningless. So,
but would you
I'm
say
just
that's
talking
not
rubbish here? I'm just talking off the top of my head.
No,
it did not help me at all.
Would you say that's not part of the process, though? Because initially the beats helped you write get through that initial draft of whatever it was.
It is. I always think of, I know as soon as I finish the first draft, probably 80% of it's going to change because I'll rethink what actually I want it to be. So that just seems to annoyingly be a part of my process, which makes it longer, I guess, and means like, oh, you've just written a 50,000 word thing. Damn, I'm going to get rid of 30,000 words of it now because I have to change everything again. So that is not a great process, but that seems to be mine so far.
Yeah, I think I've been pretty similar, but we're writing these books at the minute, and I've got to a point where I've realized I've been going pretty close to the beats, and then I've realized that it can't do that anymore. Like, it has to change pretty significantly.
There's too much
beats for this slight story. But I think that's just a lesson, like, stories are malleable. Like, you do sort of have to, like, chew on them for, like, ages until it starts to really look like what you want it to look like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, once you get into it, it kind of sounds a bit airy-fairy, but it kind of tells you what it wants to be, I guess, in a way. And it's like, well, this is the best thing you could do with this story now, not what you were trying to do. So you've got to kind of, you kind of know. I always start getting a bit worried and I kind of wander around my kitchen and I never want to do the big change where I have to scrap everything. But then after a few days, it's like, well, this is what it's got to be, hasn't it? You just get on with it.
It's definitely part of the process. I mean, with Clockwork Rose, which is the first draft that I did, that was phenomenally different to the second. And it's just one of those things I think you learn. And like Luke said, with the ones that we're going through at the minute, we've both gone through already substantial changes. And I know that a few episodes ago when we first got round to starting the books, we both went, we've got full beats, we know where we're going, we've never been more prepared in our lives, and we're now sort of, I don't know, a week and a half away from finishing, and we're both going, we've changed a hell of a lot, and that's just in the first draft alone. So I think that's just part of the process, to give yourself that chance to learn the story, to understand it, and to let yourself have that vomit draft so you can start the second one and know what the story is.
Yeah. Sometimes like the story's already there and like you're just trying to work it out by writing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Matt, have you ever thought about co-writing? I mean, you do screenplays, right? So would you be open to doing it in prose?
I'd certainly give it a go. It would be odd, wouldn't it? I don't quite know how it. Well, obviously, lots of people do it. You two, you're kind of doing it, are you? You're kind of, one of you is writing something and the other one's going to polish it. Is that right? You're not kind of sending chapters back and forth, or?
No. So, well, we sort of pitched each other various ideas for the stories we might want to do. And then we swapped, like, we gave each other, like, a really brief outline, and then the other guy came up with the beats and they developed the characters and where the story would go, and now we've swapped again and we're doing each other's first drafts, and then this is where we're at now. Like, we're just finishing the first drafts and we're not sure whether we want to go back over it ourselves again or swap now and have the other person do some pretty heavy rewriting, I guess.
Yeah,
to get it.
It's even with co-authoring, I mean, this is the first time we've both done it, and it's, even that's a learning curve. And we're constantly kind of going, when we next do this part, should we do X? Should we do Y? And I think the key will be just to give it a crack and see what works. But I mean, so far it's working for us. I know that it doesn't work for everyone. And before it was kind of suggested, I didn't think I would co-write. But both have their own benefits.
Yeah. I feel like it's been pretty interesting. I feel like I wouldn't have been able to do this for my first book. Like, I had to get a couple of books out of the way that that were just my ego in a way. And, yeah. And now I'm like, I'm that satiated. So I'm just, I just want to make a really good book now. I just really want to make good stuff. And I feel like the best way to do that is by co-writing, for me at the minute anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I'd certainly give it a go, but it would definitely be strange to start with.
Yeah.
Oh, it is.
It's not like with a script. I guess you're kind of used to stuff getting changed, and it's a bit more, they're a bit more your words or whatever when it comes to prose, aren't they? Rather than just interior, he walks in, it's like, okay, you can change that. I don't care about you changing that.
Yeah.
So it would be odd, but it'd be an interesting experience, I guess.
See, I don't mind because I know Dan's a better writer than me. So I know if he changes something, it's going to be for the better.
Says the one who's published his books already and is way ahead. But no, I think part of it as well comes in opportunity, because if it hadn't have been for, you know, Hawk and Cleaver and the fact that we've met and we sort of have similar ways of working, I don't think I would have considered it, because I know a lot of people want that relationship, that kind of opportunity to go author, but you don't want to just throw yourself at people. I mean, when you started working with Isabel, was that something that happened naturally, or was that something that you kind of just whacked two bricks together and tried to see what happened?
Yeah, it was. She was, I was writing on my own, just writing comedy stuff. And she appeared as an actress in a little video that me and some other writers did. And then she appeared in something else. And we just kind of crossed paths a few times. And then she just asked me to, oh, do you want to write a sketch sometime? And it's like, okay, 3-page sketch, I'll do that. And then it just kind of, it's enjoyable to write with someone, I found, rather than being on my own, certainly with scripts. And it just kind of built and built until we weren't writing our stuff on our own at all. And we were just writing everything together. So we were just like, oh, I guess we're a writing team now. We just went with that.
Do you find that it helps because it's comedy as well? Like, is it all comedy mostly, or is it a bit of
everything? Yeah, with Isabel, it's all been comedy stuff.
So are you able to, like, find out if something's actually funny? Because I know, like, when I've written comedy in the past, like, there's sometimes where you don't know if something's really funny until you put it out to someone, I guess. So are you finding that back and forth working?
Yeah, it is helpful because, as you say, you just kind of have to assume something's funny. But if the other person says that's funny, it's like, well, at least one person thought it wasn't terrible. So maybe it's okay. Maybe someone else will think it's funny. So, yeah, it does help in that way. And it's just a good kind of support network, I suppose. If you write with someone else, you're not doing stuff on your own, because writing's kind of a lonely thing, I guess. I mean, I don't mind doing it, but you are basically on your own most of the time. Whereas if you've got a partner, it's like, oh, you get to have meetings and you get to sit together and talk about stuff.
Human contact.
Yeah, it's a bit more social and a bit nicer, and you can laugh rather than just going, is this good? I don't know, and then crying.
Yeah, we'll have to try and get you and Isabel on at the same time and have a bit of a talk about script writing and that kind of world and working together, because that would be interesting as well.
Yeah.
What was the, you did something with Alice Lowe and Kevin Eldon, right? Some of my favourite UK people.
Yeah, it was a little non-broadcast pilot. I think it was about 10 minutes long, and it was just, it was called Missing Scene, and it was supposed to be kind of, you're hopping around between old TV or genre films. So there was an alien invasion thing in black and white, and it was kind of a sketch show, but not really a sketch show. It just had funny bits. Maybe that's why it didn't work, because it was kind of a sketch show. Wasn't a sketch show, so that's why people went, it looks very nice, no thank you.
Is it?
Oh, you've got Kevin Eldon in it, well done, no thank you.
Was it like a sketch version of Garth Marenghi's Dark Place?
I love that show.
Whereas that was like, you were up late at night and you found a TV show and you watched the entire thing. Was yours more, you're still flicking through?
Yeah, it'd be like if you were going through quite a few of those kind of things, yeah. And I look after Engi as well,
Yeah.
I'm still sad he hasn't done anything else, hardly at all. He's such a small body of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. And who wrote Garth Marenghi? Was it Richard Awadi?
I think it was mostly the, is
I can't remember his name. Yeah.
Yeah, Garth. It was him.
Yeah,
he
yeah.
wrote most of it. And everyone else in it went off to do big things. And he, I don't know what happened. Well, he's around, but he doesn't seem to do anything.
Yeah, it's a shame. But
Matthew Holness and Richard
Matthew
A.O.
Matthew Holness, that's the one, yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I Googled that. I'm not just...
Yeah. So we're coming towards the end of the time already. We've got, like, a quick fire round.
Okay.
I'm going to put a jingle in here. I'm not too sure what yet, but it's going to be great.
Quickly, please.
So no pressure. Just try and give the best responses you can in the quickest time to the questions.
In under 5 seconds. Is that too soon? Yes. Is that too quick?
No, go on.
Okay, cool.
Do you want to take it in turns, Luke? Have you got the list in front of you?
I've got it in front of me, so you go first, then I'll go second.
Okay, what's the first thing you do when you wake up?
Toilet.
Last thing you do before you go to sleep?
Toilet.
Worst advice?
Oh, God. Being a writer is a really good idea. You'll make loads of money. Be successful. You don't need a backup.
What makes a good writer?
Practice and reading lots, basically.
What's your favourite film?
Halloween.
Favourite book?
Maybe Coraline.
Favourite word?
Christ. I don't have a favourite word.
I'm going to say, oh, Christ is your answer. Hogwarts or District 13?
District 13.
Haribo or Stardust?
Haribo? Oh, yes.
Who's your spirit author?
Neil Gaiman.
I thought you were going to say that as well.
Yeah, I had a feeling.
Yeah. Cool, that's all I've got. Yeah, that's pretty good. I like that, Dan. That's a good idea.
Yeah, cool. You're our test pilot for quickfire questions.
I did feel under pressure there.
I don't think I'd be able to do it. If someone was like, what's your favourite word? I'd be like, oligopoly. But that's only because I learned that a week ago, so that's fresh in my head. But...
I'd be looking around. Pen. cool, yeah, man. So have you got anything you want to plug? What, like a mailing list sign up or a free book perhaps or something?
If you go to my site, I guess it's Mr. Matthew Stott, you'll find a link to get onto the mailing list and you get 3 free books. I give everything away. It's all there. If you want free stuff, go to my website.
Cool. Dan, do we have a sponsor yet?
We're in the process for having a sponsor for the other stories. We're close. Okay. I think by the time this is out, we might have.
Expect a sponsored listeners.
Yes. And also plugging, as we always do, the other stories, but mostly because I want to throw this in as well, the fact that we're currently number 8 in the literature charts on iTunes. Mm. So that's pretty fantastic.
I was thinking, why don't you write a guest episode of The Other Stories? Because
I did bring this up, yeah.
You have a very... I feel like your stories would fit quite well.
Okay. if you want me to, I can attempt it.
Cool. We'll talk behind the scenes. We'll give you a theme and if you're happy to do so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very happy.
Awesome.
Cool. All right. Leave it at that and I'll hit the stop the record button now.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Story Studio podcast. Still hungering for some podcast goodness? Then why not check out our other show, The Other Stories? Oh, and did you know, every time you leave us a review in the iTunes store, a puppy is born. Cute, eh? Anyway, toodle pip.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.